And Sean Duke is here. He's joint editor of Science Spin magazine. Sean, thanks for coming in. Sure. But what about this thing about have we got a sort of collective memory? Is what happened to our ancestors, does that influence we feel and what our attitudes are?
I suppose I should start by saying that DNA, of course, is the whole basis for genetic inheritance. And in the 1950s, DNA was discovered. And of course, since then, it's become nearly like a mantra that really it's all in your genes. So there's this idea that became very strong over the years that certain things you can't escape from if they're actually dictated in your genes, that you're more prone to certain things, maybe certain diseases, maybe certain addictions or whatever it is. That, you know, you're just unlucky if you get a certain DNA code and you live a shorter life and get sick, and you're very lucky if you're born with another one. But things have started to change recently, and this is the Darwinian view of genetics as well, that, you know, that our genetics determines how well we survive in life. But there's another thing apparently going on. People might remember in school that there was an argument always between nature and nurture. So nature would be what you were born with, and nurture is your environment. But it seems now that your environment, say for example what's happening in Somalia at the moment with the famine, obviously there's women that are pregnant at the moment with children, sadly. Now, those kids, if they're lucky enough to actually survive and get born, will, it seems, have a memory in their bodies of the stress that their mother was under. But it doesn't stop there. That stress can be passed on to their children and perhaps their children and several generations, which is fascinating. So, for example, in Ireland, of course, the big traumatic event that we had in this country by far was the famine that hit in 1845 to 1851. And, you know, I was just thinking about it on the way in, say people in their 70s now, it's not that long ago, it seems like an enormous amount of time, but people in their 70s today, their great-grandparents possibly were born during the famine, so it's not that far back. Now, studies on animals have shown that we actually, that the environment, say with extreme stress like the Great Famine in Ireland, or another study that's been done is on the Jewish people in the Holocaust, that maybe I'll just mention that one briefly, and then I'll get that what happened there was that they were under severe stress, and they found a higher level of a stress chemical called cortisol. Now, it wasn't surprising to find that in the children of Holocaust survivors, because the mother was very stressed. She was sharing the blood and everything else with the child. So if they had higher cortisol, not surprising. The big surprise was that the third generation, who might have been born in the 60s, 70s or whatever, they had a memory of the stress of the Holocaust still as well. So, you know, there's a memory there. In Ireland, with the famine, now what it seems was happening, this all began with a study in Sweden, of all places, in the north, very north of Sweden. This is not that long ago. This is about 2003, 2004, I think. And this Swedish scientist, Dr. Bygren is his name anyway, he began to wonder, can the environment, say with famines that were happening in this isolated population in northern Sweden, they had years when they had really bad famines and they were so isolated that they'd literally starve, even though this was Sweden, and then they'd other years where it was a very abundant harvest and they'd actually overeat. So he was wondering, you know, it was feast or famine.
Yeah.
Does this impact on the genes? And yes, it certainly does.
Really? Yeah. So does that mean, let's just take the stage further and say, do Irish people, and what did you say about Irish people and Jewish people, they didn't have a nationality, they had a psychosis. probably because of occupation and all that sort of stuff.
That's right. Colonialism. Well, I mean, say psychology, of obviously the Jewish people, they wouldn't like to have me say that they're defined by the Holocaust, but it's an enormous thing for them. You know, definitely. And there's a psychological memory, but this is fascinating that there may actually be a genetic memory of this trauma with the Irish, the famine.
Well, let's look around the world and say, that means, could a population of any country have a chip in its shoulder permanently?
Could, yes. I mean, what in the animal kingdom, the studies show that, for example, if a population, I won't go into the various different animals, but they've done studies to show if a particular population starts to dwindle Because let's say, for example, there's predators out there and there's more predators and the population goes down very low, then the mothers in this population of animals get very stressed because obviously they're under threat from these predators. I'm making my point now slowly. But in the second generation, those children will be quite anxious. So generally, and this operates in human society as well. So if your mother was very stressed and anxious, there's a higher likelihood that you as an adult are going to be stressed and anxious as well. Same in the animal kingdom. And the reason they think, the theory is that if there is a danger there, out there, right, that it makes biological sense for the next generation, for the parents to pass on this information so that their children will be hyper-vigilant. So obviously with the Jewish people, there was a major threat there. They were nearly wiped out in Europe. It was passed on. They're hyper-vigilant. I watched something recently where I think Jewish people, some of them even changed their names to non-Jewish names and pretended they weren't Jewish after the war because they didn't trust humanity anymore. Now, that happens in the animal kingdom as well. So it's like a survival mechanism. But getting on to the Irish situation, what's fascinating there is that what was brilliant, like essentially, I know a lot of people have come into this country in the last, say, 10, 20 years that would have no link back to the famine, but a lot of us do. Now, the ones, the Irish people that have links back to that period, essentially, we're the survivors of a famine. We were the ones that were able to actually lay down fat and survive in a period of famine better than our fellow countryman or woman who died and wasn't able to do that. Now, in the modern world, what that means is, unfortunately, could lead to obesity, because something that was very beneficial back in 1845, being able to survive a famine, these days in times of plenty, leaves us open to obesity, heart disease, cardiovascular disease, shorter lifespans as a result. So that's the payoff now, if you like. But this could happen in any place in the world. I mean, I'm sure if scientists decided they couldn't, because it's a tragedy, but in Somalia, if you were going to follow those mothers and children that survived this and then look at it again maybe in 40 years' time, there'll still be a memory of that traumatic event in the Somalian population, which...
But not in the conscious memory, but just in the DNA.
Well,
it'll be in the
chemicals to make them more vigilant. They might be more anxious, they might be more fearful, which means that, you know, any kind of threat of a famine or anything to them, they'll react immediately.
Well, I was just looking at that programme last night on TV3, The Tenements.
Yeah.
And both my sides of the family lived in tenements.
Right, in
Dublin Street, yeah.
Right.
And I remember seeing my father's one, where he grew up, and there was one room at the top of the stairs,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And, it's just, you wouldn't fancy living. You had to go outside to the toilet and all that sort of stuff.
And were they stressed people, do you think,
it made me ask the question.
Yeah.
I wonder, is there something that has come along with that?
Yeah. You know? There's another message here, actually, which people want is relevant, I think, is there was enough and we drink and maybe we eat too much, we're a little bit overweight. That's really our own fault and it's our own watch out. And it doesn't mean that it's going to have any impact necessarily on our children, because when we pass on our genes to our children, they start with a clean slate, and you know, it's up to them then if they want to not drink or drink or smoke or whatever, that they make their own decisions. But now with this new science that I'm talking about here, where there's more than just the DNA involved, it's called epigenetics. So the DNA, you know, say with identical twins, this is the best way to look at it, that they've done studies on identical twins that are separated, and one identical twin is excellent health and the other twin doesn't. So you'd wonder why. And the reason is that changes can happen to the DNA in response to the environment. So if a father, for example, is very, typically it goes down the father line, is a heavy smoker, let's say he starts smoking at 10 or 11, right, and he's living in the tenements in Dublin or something like that, that there's a price to be paid for that, because they've then looked at the children of the people who are the heavy smokers and the very early smokers, and it would apply to drink and other, you know, overeaters, that actually has an impact on their children. And the children are more prone to cardiovascular disease, they're more prone to obesity, and there is a huge difference, quite a big difference, at least 6 or 7 years difference in their lifespan. So what we do in our own lives, our behaviour actually impacts on our genes. because it will what we're passing on to the next generation, it's been adjusted and changed. So if you think of the DNA is something that takes an awful long time to change. It's like a code we're born with. So it takes literally, like Darwin said, it might take 20, 30 generations. So that's one thing, right? That's the code for your eye colour, your hair colour, your height, all of those kind of things. But you also need something that's going to react to a situation you're in more quickly. So if you're in a starvation situation in northern Sweden or Somalia or whatever, you know, this epigenetics thing is a way of manipulating the DNA to respond to what's happening to you right now. So it's like a big long chain, this DNA, and then these chemicals, they're called little methyl groups, they can come in and they can turn certain parts of the DNA on and they can turn other bits off in response to what's happening in the
right.
environment.
So they change. So very good, Sean. Yeah. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
Really amazing. So,
and it's a fairly new science. And I mean, when I was in college in the 80s, this stuff wasn't heard of at all. That, you know, the DNA, basically you have your DNA and that's it. But now it seems that we've got more of an impact.
That it can be changed.
Yeah.